these guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Well, welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. We're going to jump right into it. A short segment today with John Najarian from CNBC joins us from New York. Just saw him on the halftime report. John, I think I should go use my Kohl's cash this week.
Yes, you should, while it's still open.
What's the miserable today? They're
but it is having, it's having a miserable day, Stephen, as you know. The miserable day is because they missed on sales, they missed on profits, and then they lowered forecasts going forward. They said it's going to be extremely promotional through the end of the year, which I read, and I think a lot of other folks read, as meaning no profits, really, from what they're going to be selling. That's bad for Kohl's.
They're having such a bad day that they're bringing down everyone else in retail.
Not everyone, though.
No?
You look at TJ Maxx, TJX, and also Ross stores. In other words, the big discounters are still doing okay. But, yeah, Macy's and Home Depot and a host of others, they have different issues than Ross stores.
Yeah, what? Why is Home Depot down today?
Well, they were trading at an all-time high, and they came in a little light on sales and didn't really scare me off. We're still in this one. I would continue to hold it. And it's been just on a furious tear to the upside. And obviously, unlike, sadly, Kohl's, it's not experiencing that kind of 18% decline. It's a relatively minor 3.5% decline.
So if I can go back to Kohl's very quickly, then you said deep discounts. So that's going to be a place to go shopping for Christmas.
Yes, unfortunately for them, but yeah, fortunately for you, it will be good. Again, TJ Maxx, by the way, new 52-week high today. Ross Stores, another deep discounter, just off of a 52-week high. So it definitely pulled down the full-price retailers when Home Depot and Kohl's had those numbers, but the discounters still doing extremely well.
Okay, talk to me about Boeing, because they had started the day with some good news, with some sales, but then later the NTSB says they want more of an overhaul of their 737s. That there was a fan came off an engine and went through a window, I think it was in 2018, so the NTSB on them for that. Where are their stocks today?
Boeing did make it back into the green, and I'm not sure where it is right this second. But that move, like you say, was because of some additional sales that they hadn't really anticipated at that Dubai Air Show. They moved a fair amount of those 737 Maxes at discounted prices, so that was good for them.
Shows confidence, I guess, that they can sell the 737 Max even while it's grounded. Okay, what are you watching today?
Chewy, C-H-W-Y. This is, of course, anybody with pets probably already knows it, and if you don't, you will. They're one of the premier deliverers of toys, food, cat litter, whatever. And if you buy enough of it, you get free delivery with it. So it's one of those stocks that came public this year, had some hiccups with performance, but it looks like it's back on track. So we've been buying it for the last 2 days. And it's been moving up nicely over these past 2 days.
John Najarian, it is always great to talk to you. Thanks for squeezing me in today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. You know, we talk a lot in this program about big tech moving into the medical industry, and there's a story in the Washington Post written by Doug McMillan about that, about Google, actually about a thwarted attempt. He joins us on a phone line now. Doug, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, so the news last week was that Google was moving toward, was it Google or Amazon, moving toward Fitbit? That was Amazon.
Google. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, that's one example of where they're trying to get into the healthcare industry and perhaps gather data. But you report on something that happened not last week, but a couple of years ago in 2017. Tell me about that and the significance of it.
Yeah, so Google has been trying to get into healthcare for many years now, actually. They see a potential gold mine in the data that exists in health records, but obviously the problem with that is that it's very, very, very sensitive data, and the privacy implications of handling sensitive health data are not something that Google has been equipped to handle over the years, and that was kind of demonstrated in this episode that we reported on last week. So what happened was they, in partnership with the National Institutes of Health, which is the federally funded research hospital based here in Bethesda, Maryland, they partnered to put more than 100,000 X-ray images of human chests publicly available on the internet. The plan was they were going to put these chest X-ray images out to the public to help give researchers the chance to build software that could automatically detect lung disease and other health conditions that you can maybe quickly, the typical, you know, radiologist could spot by looking at these images. They wanted to make these images available for computers to be able to quickly spot those problems.
So the idea wasn't that you or I were going to be looking at these chest X-rays, but others would, the scientists would, that would allow for better and quicker readings and diagnoses in the future.
That's right, yeah. The problem was they realized far along in the process, you know, a few days before they were actually slated to announce this at a conference, the researchers realized that some of these images contained personally identifiable information. So some of them contained dates that the images were taken, which if you have that information and you know where they're taken, that could help you kind of deduce maybe who these images were taken of.
Right.
And some of the images also contained, interestingly, one of the personally identifiable pieces of information in X-rays is jewelry. If you're wearing distinctive jewelry at the time that you get an X-ray taken, that could be used to identify you.
So Google,
so a couple days.
I was going to say, so Google just dropped the project altogether.
Yeah, so they got spooked by it. They checked with their lawyers. You know, we got this Freedom of Information Act request that showed kind of the emails between the researchers on this. They were spooked by it. They checked with their lawyers, and they decided that they couldn't quickly determine whether or not this information was protected by the health data laws. There's a federal law called HIPAA, which protects health data, and they couldn't actually determine whether or not this was covered by HIPAA in a way that satisfied their lawyers, so they just kind of backed out of the project.
So who was at fault here? Because it seems to me like the NIH should not have given them the access to X-rays that had those sorts of determining factors on them or those descriptions on them.
Yeah, certainly the NIH bears some responsibility and provided the images. But, you know, the point that we wanted to illustrate in this story was that Google does not have, you know, very much experience in healthcare, and they are rushing into this field without kind of a clear understanding of the laws and the privacy expectations that apply. You know, one of the key findings that the sources told us who were involved in this incident said that, you know, Google did not consult with any lawyers internally until 2 days before announcing this project. So just the fact that they didn't even
look into it, right,
to go, you know, talk to a lawyer and say, hey, maybe this might be sensitive data that we should, you know, check into the legal implications of, I think says a lot about, you know, the priorities of this company.
Well, we're sitting in Chicago. Isn't there also a Chicago case, a lawsuit involving Google and the University of Chicago?
Yes, I am not super familiar with the details of that, but in the spring, Google and the University of Chicago Medical School were sued for allegedly improperly sharing patient records because they contain personal information, and I think that the details of that I'm not familiar with,
sure.
But the outcome of that is still up in the air. I think we haven't reached a conclusion.
Sure,
on that
but
yet.
The same sort of thing where maybe they're rushing into release data that's not covered. Now, but the NIH subsequently has released these X-rays through another cloud storage provider, right, called Box?
Yeah, essentially they just went ahead. They scrubbed all the private patient information themselves, and several weeks later they uploaded it to, you know, kind of a just a public website hosted by another service, cloud service provider called Box. And, you know, there have been researchers using this information to build these kinds of computer algorithms, but, you know, notably, Google's name was never announced as part of that, and Google, until our story came out, never discussed publicly its involvement in this project.
They are discussing publicly this project with Ascension, though, and it seems to be similar in a way, right? It's gathering data that will be made available to researchers.
Yeah, they're confirming the existence of this partnership. I wouldn't say that they are
necessarily telling us a lot about it,
volunteering a lot
right.
of information about it. It seems to be the, you know, for a company that's had a lot of false starts in the world of healthcare, this seems to be one of the most broad-based attempts to kind of fully enter the world of medical health data. They are working with this company, Ascension, to get access to millions of consumers, sensitive personal medical information, which, you know, they say, Ascension, Google say, is using to potentially help physicians make better recommendations on care.
Well,
if you can, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, one way to look at, I mean, long term, if this is done right, this is a good thing, isn't it? I mean, our healthcare system will be made better with all of this data, or am I mistaken?
I think that there are enormous potential benefits to using technology in healthcare, and there are certainly some major flaws and inefficiencies in how, you know, healthcare and healthcare data is currently processed. You know, currently it has to kind of go through dozens of different siloed organizations to you know, to get anything done.
Doug McMillan writes about that at the Washington Post. Doug, great to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It is 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, on a phone line now is longtime Bears defensive end Israel Adonijay, who, I don't know, Israel, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
You know, I just started by introducing you as a former Bear. I don't know, when do we give that up? You've done so much since then.
Now you can still use that.
So I was struggling earlier to describe what it is that you've come up with, this Fabric Impact House. And I see, I think it was a quote from you, you call it a philanthropy innovation center. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so Impact House ultimately is a space here in the city that we're looking to make as the hub for philanthropy in Chicago. Across the city, there are so many organizations, groups, foundations, individuals that are committed to giving. And I think, well, we think that it's important for us to come together around the different verticals of impact. Who's really doing amazing work in poverty, in food and shelter, in education, in equity, all of these different categories, all that information should live in one place.
You described that as an impact audit across the country or across the city.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. So take all that data of what it looks like, the landscape, that audit of philanthropy in our city, and let all that information live in one place. With the notion being, and you know, I think a real life example is there's a number of athletes in the city here that are incredibly gifted athletes in our city and performing every day in their sport. They want to now give back. Where do they go to find out who's really crushing it in that sector that they want to give to? It's a little bit daunting, not just for the athletes or entertainers, but really for anybody. Like, how do you find out who's really doing an amazing job in mental health and set up a meeting with that leadership and figure out how you can use your gift or your resources to support that, the work they're doing?
So is it like a donation store? Like, you're going to go? Describe the space for me and how it is, why it's important that they be brought together in a physical space.
Yeah, so phase one of this, the impact network, we're calling it, is all of the grantors.
Okay.
So everyone who is investing, the impact investors in the city, to bring them under one roof. So if you're writing checks, if you're funding impact work the impact entrepreneurs, we call them. If you're supporting the work corporately as a corporation in the city, as a foundation, as a family fund, as an individual, you know, we want to know your story of why you give, what you're giving to, what that looks like. Uh-huh. And phase one of that is membership into the space. The space itself is 45,000 square feet, 15 conference rooms, over 65 private offices, 4 work lounges where you can kind of work in a number of different environments, 2 bars, 1 restaurant. So as a member, you can utilize any of those spaces to come host a meeting. If you need a flag downtown here in the city, your family office or foundation is in the suburb, or you don't have an office down here. For any of those grantors, you can now have a place where you can come in and work. Another thing that's interesting is a lot of these foundations in a traditional sense, they aren't in the most innovative space in the world. And when you look at hiring, you know, they're looking for dynamic hire, development staff and young, people to run their companies and be a part of their teams as well. Well, we believe that just because you're doing impact work, your space shouldn't be secondary space. So all of those groups now get to be in this incredible 45,000 square foot, beautiful, inspiring space, and just really work together, sharing thought, ideas and sharing work, is that duplicate work, learn from each other. So, I think that's really the secret of what we're doing here.
So it will be a home base more for the givers than the receivers.
Phase one is specifically for the givers. Okay. We're looking to do this in phases. So if you're supporting work, phase one, you can apply. You know, we have a board that kind of looks, reviews all of the organizations, and they, upon being accepted, you have a membership. You can come use the club however you need. You can you have conference room hours every month that you could utilize for your guests and for your network of people to meet, to socialize however you like. And then phase two, shortly here, we'll be bringing online a portal, a digital platform,
okay,
where we're going to look to onboard all of the city's nonprofit organizations, our impact entrepreneurs. So, yeah, I'm funding, work in homelessness in the city. Okay, that's on one side of the spectrum. Well, who's doing the engine work, we call it, like that, the real work of feeding the people or finding the people that need help, that need to get, just to let them know that they're not alone and whatever they're going, who's doing that work? Well, phase two is taking those entrepreneurs, bringing them into the network, building their profiles, learning what they do, how they do it, what they need, what does innovation look like in these different spaces. So it's a long vision, but we're building this thing together.
And how does this come out of a project with Julius Peppers, the South Michigan Avenue project?
Yeah, so the other project on Michigan Avenue specifically will be for all of the members. So okay. in the Impact House, it'll be specifically for the grantors. But anyone else in the community, if you're in business, if you're in technology, if you're an artist, if you're a nonprofit, you can apply for membership at that Fabric location in the South Loop, which is we're calling it our HQ, the South Loop.
Okay.
Fabric specifically. You don't have to just be a grantor. Anyone can live there. So that's the second phase. That's the second part of the equation that we're going to build, where everyone else will be in this other location. All the specific grantors will be specifically in Impact House. And we got there because when we looked at any industry segment, whether you're an entertainer or a business guy or, an artist, whatever it might be, as soon as you hit a level of success, and truthfully, even before you hit whatever that looks like for you, most people want to give. Most people want to support. Most people want to give back in some capacity. So we felt that Impact House as a standalone thing really had the legs to be that information hub for the city, for anyone to come in and learn about who's really giving or doing meaningful work in an impact sector that they care about. And that's why at that location, the first floor is public. Is the public work lounge. Anyone can come there. And we'll also have a knowledge center where anyone can come and do research and learn about work that's being done throughout the city.
That's Israel Adonijay. You know, Israel, we got to run. But so in the beginning, I introduced and joked around about identifying as you as a former bear. I'm just curious, how do you identify yourself, Dawin, these days?
I just I identify myself as an entrepreneur. You know, I'm here in the city where we're working hard. We're fortunate to have some companies that we're working with. I mean, as you know, I'm a Bears fan and a Bears supporter and part of the family to the bone. So I'm a Chicagoan and I'm an entrepreneur.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, we're glad you're here. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
It's the Biz Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Sending the right message to clients and potential customers has never been more important than it is today. Over the last few weeks, Fisher Investments learned that the hard way. Clients are pulling their money out of the fund after the chief investment officer made lewd comments at an industry conference as he was on stage. Over $3.9 billion has been pulled from the company's portfolio so far, including from the Chicago Police Pension Fund, when they decided to divest their $67 million under management. Other major clients have pulled their money as well, but this may not be the end of it. We'll see how it unfolds next. And speaking of what's next, we turn to the restaurant industry. But unfortunately, fans of Pork and Mindy's will be disappointed because the restaurant has officially filed for bankruptcy. It's surprising because it was right after they signed a deal to open up small locations in 20 area Mariano stores. The handful of locations in the Loop and Wrigleyville will likely soon be closed, so Chicagoans are going to have to find some barbecue elsewhere because Chapter 7 bankruptcy ends in handing over the assets to authorities. All that matters is that our stomachs are still going to growl. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Hey, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth is in the studio joining Justin Timberlake and myself as we wind down.
Often is the case, yeah.
Justin, stay away. Okay, so Amy's the host of the Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business, and we have talked about Stanley's Fruit Market.
Yes.
I'm going to put it at North and Armitage, that's my guess, but it's...
Elston and North,
yep. Okay. And they went out of business recently, a long time, decades-long fruit vendor there, but in prime property, especially when you consider Lincoln Yards. And now they have sold the property, or what's happened today?
Well, the sale is still pending the owner's approval, which is the family of Stanley Peters, yeah, who opened it in 1967.
I'm not going to say no. Go ahead.
I'm sure they're not, right? So it's a Cleveland-based investor who declined to be identified. He didn't tell Cranes exactly, or he or she did not say exactly who they were. They agreed to pay $11.75 million for the 1.7-acre site. So that's the Stanley store, the parking lot, a cold storage facility, and a residential facility or building right there. So it's a good little parcel of land, especially given the proximity to Lincoln Yards.
We don't know yet what might be done with this property, correct?
Correct. And so it's still, they could do a number of things. Almost anything they'd have to do short of making a grocery store would require some kind of zoning appeals. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is kind of joining a string of things. So the Morton Salt building that we all see when we drive by, right on the highway, you see the Morton Salt girl.
Remember the wall gave way a few years ago?
Yeah, that whole thing. That was a big deal. I mean, because people recognize that, there I am, there, right. You know, I'm home, right? People recognize that spot. So that's going to be turned into something that is like a, an entertainment complex and shops and retail and just a bunch of stuff over there. It's going to be called the Salt District.
Nice.
So it's going to look very different over there in a few years.
I don't think I knew that. Is that fairly new?
Fairly new, okay. Like kind of within the last year. So.
Well, you know what's happening is the drive-in from the north side now, your skyline will be altered.
Absolutely.
It will not look like the Chicago of today in, 5 or 10 years?
That's right. Especially if, the plan for Lincoln Yards is to have skyscrapers up to 600 feet tall, it's going to look completely different right there.
Of course, when you make plans for the future, sometimes you're surprised.
That's right. Sometimes things intervene. I mean, and so all along the plan was for Stanley's to close. And so they had spoken to brokerage. They were that was in the works because they knew Lincoln Yards was coming.
Right.
The surprise twist was they suddenly, very abruptly, closed the doors, and social media kind of exploded when that happened in April. People were going, R.I.P. Stanley's. People really, really had feelings about that place.
Yeah, well, I used to go there all the time once every 6 months when I would feel healthy. I'm going to start, damn it, and I would go there and buy Sprouts or something like that. When I wasn't feeling healthy, I would go to Pork and Mindy's.
Ah, yeah, another close up right there.
Yeah, what happened there?
So it's still kind of unclear what exactly happened, but celebrity chef and Chicago native Jeff Morrow, he's behind Pork and Mindy's. It's never a good sign when the flagship or first location closes,
right.
And that happened. That's the one on Bucktown at North and Damon right there. That one closed in August, and there was really a lot of speculation, what's going on. So earlier this month, the company declared bankruptcy, listing between 1 and 10 million with an estimated 50 to 99 creditors. So clearly there was some trouble happening.
I mean, we've been talking about Mariano's. They were moving into Mariano's.
They were going to create stalls in 20 different Mariano's stores by the end of this year. And suddenly there's all of that is just kind of gone. So, you know, still remains to be seen. No official comment from Mauro yet on what that's all about. But it really kind of points to it's an interesting and tough time for restaurants.
That's Amy Guth, the host of The Daily Gist. Check it out. Crane Chicago Business. Thanks for coming by, Amy.
Thanks so much.